Welcome to Magic the Amateur's Pajama Party 2017.
That's right. This is actually the only time in 2017 when I will wear pajamas.
Really?
Yeah, the rest of the time I just wear my full clothes from the day to bed.
Isn't that uncomfortable? I did that in high school.
No, it's totally normal. Yeah. I'm used to it.
Yeah. So we're celebrating tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
Megan's only time in pajamas.
This is my annual day of wearing pajamas.
Perfect. Do you know it like the beginning of the day that that's going to be the day?
I put it on my calendar every year. Wow. I put it on my calendar. Nice. It's always 1 year and one day, so it never falls on the same day.
Oh. Right.
Every year. Right. It always falls on the next day.
That voice you're hearing, that's not Megan or I. It's not actually Ghost Host, so don't go freaking out yet. Ghost Host is not suddenly materialized into human form.
No.
But Ben Seck,
as we know.
It is Mr. Ben Seck who's joining us for this pajama party.
Hello.
In pajamas as well.
I am in my pajamas, but like I usually go to bed with like some fleecy like bottoms and also one of my t-shirts that I grab from the shelf.
Yeah, and I'm wearing your dog sweater here.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice. It's fluffy. Yeah. Fluffy. Do you want to say anything about your pajamas, Megan?
No, I mean, this is their one day a year to rock it, so I think they're doing a great job.
We're having a pajama party to celebrate Grand Prix San Jose this week on Magic the Amateuring. Mm-hmm. All three of us played in the main event.
Yep. Some of us played more of the main event than others.
That's accurate.
As you will soon find out.
That's accurate.
Yes.
It was a limited tournament. It was sealed deck, and we're going to talk all about that, as well as GP Prague, which happened this weekend before the Pro Tour as well. And we're going to interview Ben here because this is like
He's
a mini.
He's been playing for like 20-something years.
You've been playing forever.
I have been playing for, I think, 23 years, something like that, something crazy.
Yep.
Like probably from the first year that Magic actually came out.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he is not too shabby at this game.
Yeah.
I mean, a little shabby.
As an Australian,
if you're a little bit shabby, we're very, very shabby.
I'm a tattered rag in the street.
Yes.
Anyway, this show is called Magic the Amateuring. If you didn't mention it, I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I'm another one of your hosts, Megan.
It's a show for players who are new to the game, returning to the game, or anybody who just likes to have a giggle from the pit of extreme joy. This show is for all of you.
That's not the only context in which you can call your stomach a pit of extreme joy.
What's the other one? What's the other
one? Like when you've eaten something great. What did you think I was going to say?
I don't know. When you're pregnant with a baby, but it's not in your uterus, it's in your stomach. Stomach, baby.
And you know me better than that, so.
That's true.
Hey, before we get started, though, we have to thank all of our sponsors on Patreon.
Yes.
Thank you so much if you support the show. You keep it happening, guys, and it means the world to us.
Yeah, so Patreon supporters, $5 level. We've got our magnets in. We showed them to you last episode.
They're amazing.
They're great.
I've just got one and it's great.
It's right over there.
Make my own words and it's going to be fantastic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Magnetic poetry for $5 patrons. And you can go to our website, magicallyamateuring.com, into our shop, and we're selling them for $5 there as well. So
which
if you
is
just
a deal because true art is priceless.
I agree.
And you can make true poetry with this, with this magnet set and no other words. Exclusively with
only
this set
these
of
words.
There's like 100 words, and there's a picture too, and the picture's with 1,000 words, so it's like 1,100 words.
Essentially.
Yes. Yeah.
If you would please tweet your sentences at us using these, it would make me quite happy.
Yes. Yeah, we really need to see them, honestly.
We also have to thank CardKingdom.com. It's an official sponsor of this podcast. CardKingdom.com/MTAcast is where to head to buy all of your sweet, sweet cards that you're going to need after you watch a Pro Tour this weekend, and you're like, I am making that sweet deck. Or, I'm inspired by something that I've seen. My friend, Pro Jared, who we had on the show a while ago, showed up this weekend in GP San Jose, and he had invented his own deck using Tezzeret's Touch and Noxious Gearhulk and Ornithopters. Like, that's so awesome.
Sure, man.
I'm trying to persuade him to do a deck tech, but it's like stuff like that where you just kind of invent your own thing. And Card Kingdom is a great place to go. They've got super fast shipping. They're all extraordinarily nice. And if you say throw an MTA sticker in the order, they will give you one for free.
What?
Yeah.
That is a great price.
I know. Can't beat free. Unless, they would also pay you money.
unless you get paid money to do something, in which case.
And of course, we gotta do a shout out to our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Megan's got an elf deck tech that's gonna be coming up. pretty soon. So head over to youtube.com/mtacast. Check out our sweet YouTube videos. We got deck techs. We got top 10 lists. I made a video about how to draft better if you think I'm real stinky poop at draft. Well, guess what? I've got 10 tips to turn you into medium good at draft. Probably.
And that's really the best that some of us can hope for.
Everyone can be great at draft.
Really?
Yes.
You really believe that?
I truly believe that.
Well, we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah, we will.
GP San Jose! Party time weekend! Pajama sleepover party! Yay! Okay, so everybody, we all played in the main event.
Yes.
We did.
Let's go through and just say how it went for us. Megan, you begin.
Oh, I went 2-4 drop.
Okay, that's not so great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your deck looked cool. You had like a way of actually doing infinite damage.
I know. It sure looked cool. Thanks for
nothing. Now she's getting sad. What? Okay, so looking at your deck, what did you play?
Okay, so I played blue red, and it had a lot of, you know, it had a lot of removal.
Yeah.
You know, we had a lot of like blue enchantments that, you know, keep things from dealing you damage, or we had, you know, some red Chandra's 4 damage spells. the classic counterpart to a Johnny's 3 damage is Chandra's 4 damage. Yeah. Chandra's 4 damage spell. And it had a Saheeli and it had a Felidar Guardian. And I did play them both.
Yes, you had infinite cat.
I never got to cat combo somebody. I never got to cat combo somebody. Really, it broke my heart. But yeah, you know, I didn't feel like my deck was 2-4 drop bad.
No, but you know what?
It was just like, you know, one time I got mauled real bad by an Aetherstorm Rock. Yeah. Another time it was like that 4-4 hexproof guy.
Yeah.
There were just some creatures that my deck couldn't deal with. And when it couldn't, I sure died to them. I sure died to them real hard.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to go next because I want the best story to be last.
Yeah.
I had a great deck, which Ben himself graded. What did you say, an 8 or a 9?
Yeah, it was an 8 or a 9. Really, really good.
So I also had the same record as Megan.
Yeah.
2-4 drop. And this deck features cards like Gifted Aetherborn, which is a 2-3 Death Touch Lifelinker, which goes really great in my deck.
Yeah.
Marionette Master, we remember that one. A nice way to end the game if you're so lucky. I had an Admiral. I had a Pain Train, because that's just a good card in any deck. Cruel Finality, Deadeye Harpooner, Noxious Gear Hulk, two Dawnfeather Eagles.
You can't go with just Noxious Gear Hulk. That's one of the best cards in the format.
I agree. Yeah. I was extraordinarily excited when I saw it. Yeah. I was really happy because I also knew that black was super good. So this made me very happy. And I had a super sick combo because I also had a Cogwork Assembler in my deck.
It's the 2-3 for 3 that you can pay 7 and create a copy of an artifact.
Correct. So what I would do is copy my Noxious Gear Hulk.
Which is pretty gross.
It turns out is a quite good thing to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Staranthopter, another Dawnfeather Eagle, Daring Demolition, and there's my other Cruel Finality, Essence Extraction. Like, this deck is sick.
Yeah.
It's really good.
So what the heck happened?
I mean, sometimes you just don't draw the right things in the right combination. Sometimes it just doesn't really happen.
You know what? You sound like a magic therapist. Like,
that's what we're really going to call this episode. It's like Megan and Maria visit the magic therapist.
That's right. It's not you. It's the cards.
It's not you. It's your deck.
Thank you.
That's
right. Thank you.
Have to find the tournament for yourself sometimes.
Here's the thing that I thought I noticed. You can tell me if I'm completely bonkers and I'm just trying to rationalize my bad play. But even though I didn't think in the main event I, you know, really had bad play, even though you saw me keep a sketchy hand, and then you witnessed that. But it turned out
okay. You still won.
Yeah. So I was beat down by quite a lot of vehicles, including Smuggler's Copter a few times, and Sky Sovereign Console Flagship, and stuff like, you know, Renegade, what is that, Runaway, Rhino Train, Untethered Express.
Untethered Express.
And my kind of takeaway was that I felt that it was pretty hard for me to deal with those situations. Not necessarily Copter, because I did have some okay removal spells, but just sometimes I felt like these vehicles that were extremely good were taking over the game, and I hadn't really felt that too much in Kaladesh as much as I felt it now. I don't really know why. Mm-hmm. I know Sealed is tough because you don't always have the artifact removal you'll need to deal with these situations, but either of you experience anything like that?
So what I think with Aether Revolt is everything got a little quicker. The two drops are better. the decks are generally more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And so all the trains, the Pain Train, the Untethered Express, you know, all a lot of the other like vehicles, they like promote you attacking because all you're doing is like you're tapping out your guys all every turn. And so one of the things I would say about your deck, I mean, we talked about having Marionette Master and Noxious Gearhulk. It's these are six mana spells, so you have to do a bunch of stuff beforehand, either kill the vehicles or the creatures beforehand or like find a way of stalling the game. And if those cards don't really come together in the right kind of combinations against your opponent's stuff, mm-hmm. you can easily find yourself like you finally get your Gearhulk down, but you're already dead because they're attacking you for the win.
Yes, and I think that was essentially what I'd feel is I was one turn away from stabilizing and turning it around, mm-hmm. but then I was dead.
You know, I also, so I played a draft today and I played the 6/6 for four. It's just the Iron Tread Crusher. And it's literally just a 6/6 with crew three.
Yeah.
For four mana. Great. And do you know what? Yeah. Usually, like, I feel like in Kaladesh, I would look at that and I'd be like, okay, whatever. But in, like, today, it's like I won so many games by just being like, well, here's this stupid 6/6.
I agree with you. I do. I don't know why. If the format's gotten faster, why, you know, that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. or just like, I feel like big things are even better than they usually are.
Yeah.
Things that are big and stupid.
Also, there's the new mechanic, Improvise.
I was going to say big and stupid.
Big and stupid? That, yeah, that is the new mechanic.
The new mechanic, big and stupid.
But what Improvise does is gets bigger creatures on the table for faster. Yep. So if, like, so having kind of a way of like beating down earlier just by playing a few more artifacts is really, really effective.
Let me ask mm-hmm. you this. So we're keeping everybody in suspense, by the way, about how you did. But so the 7/11 boat.
Yes. Yeah.
Consulate Dreadnought.
Yes. Consulate Dreadnought.
Yes.
One mana. And with Improvise, if you build your Improvise deck correctly, and you've got things like the map, you've got the Consulate Dreadnought, for example, you have the one mana, spend seven, kill something. Mm-hmm. Are you essentially putting those in as like, do you feel like they're kind of like mana rocks in that deck?
I think if you have enough Improvise, they are. And the good thing is once they've spent being mana rocks, they can, you know, have the effect. And so, you know, if you happen to have like six power, you can crew the Dreadnought. If you have seven mana, you can kill a permanent. And so they do double duty because it's essentially like drawing two cards. The first card you draw is like an elf. And the second card you draw is whatever the effect of the big thing is. And so you get, like, whenever you can get double duty out of your cards, I mean, everyone knows what two-for-ones are. It's basically the same thing. It used to be one thing, and now it's another thing. And it really, really helps you kind of last longer into the game.
I think that's so interesting. That's, like, something that we've discovered this weekend. Because prior to this, somebody would say, you know, you're playing that 7-Eleven, like, get out of here. You dirty noob. You don't know. That card's terrible.
Maria, never let anyone call you a dirty noob.
You're very clean.
Thank you. I'm the cleanest of noobs. Megan, did you have any interesting observations about the format, just like playing it? Insights is the word I'm looking for. Insights.
Yeah. Well, I feel like what I said about like just like big stupid things being pretty good.
Okay, so we've got faster, bigger and stupider, and being able to use artifacts essentially as sort of mana rocks.
Yeah.
Well, those are some pretty good insights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's cut the suspense with a knife.
Okay.
All right. How'd you do and how was your deck?
So on the first day, I actually had what I consider a kind of mediocre deck, except it had quite a lot of removal. It was black-green. Really notable was I had a few death touches. I had the one mana, I think it's
Ether green Poisoner?
The Renegade.
Narnum Renegade.
Yeah, Renegade. I had a Poisoner. I had the Cobra from the last set. So I had a lot of death touches, which is good for dealing with the vehicles that you're talking about, so I don't get run over. I had a lot of fight cards, and with death touches, actually, the fight cards are even better because they guarantee killing the creature. The only real bomb I had in my deck, I would say, is two. I had one Untethered Express, so that was really good.
Yeah, what mythic do you want to open, Megan asked me.
We just asked it in general.
In general.
Because we agreed.
Untethered Express. Yeah.
I mean, it goes in every deck, and it's just huge, and it's really easy to crew. But I think the best card of my deck, and it really outperformed, was Nissa, the Nissa that makes your lands 5/5s, it regrows permanents. It gives you kind of a Howling Mind effect whenever you play a land. It just was, I drew it a lot,
That's good.
I was able to play it. Drawing the best cards in your deck is always useful.
Yes.
But I was able to kind of just put a lot of pressure on my opponent because of just being fairly aggressive. And I was able to pull off an 8-1 on day one, which is, pretty
good. Awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was kind of a little bit salty on the game, the match I lost, because I think I should have mulliganed. And, you know, whenever you play in a tournament like this, you always kind of like rethink all the decisions you made. Yeah. But
you have to make at least one really bad decision in 9 rounds of Magic.
If you don't, you're some kind of robot.
Yeah. My bad decision was like eating something at that concession stand. It was not.
That can be
said. If only that's what you could spend it on. Yeah. What was your bad decision? Man, I ate a really shady cookie, man.
Oh, I just accepted a proposal from a stranger.
Whoa. It's like that's
a big life change.
Yeah. I know. I burned mine.
That but you know, you have quickly. To make one. You have to make one bad decision.
Yep, so there you go. I did it. Yeah. And there it is.
Yeah, so I mean, 8-1, that was great. And so that, you know, if you go 6-3 or better, you get to play on the second day and get to draft twice, which is always sweet, regardless, you know, how you do.
You get the little stamped cards.
You get the stamped cards. You got to, like, you know, listen to the judges kind of like call the draft. And that, I love playing on draft day on a Grand Prix because it's just a totally different kind of atmosphere from day one. Day one, you have a sealed deck and it's kind of like almost a free for all, but like it's very formal on the second day where they call the draft, so every time you pick it tells you when to pick next.
You like the structure.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, I kind of like organized kind of situations there when I've been able to. I don't know.
So wait, you're telling us what you like about day two of Grand Prix is the organization?
Well, it's funny at Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many people, there's almost 2,000 people at Grand Prix San Jose. When they cut to day two, there's less people, and so it feels less crowded. It feels almost a little bit more intense. For me, I mean, I'm pretty competitive. I mean, but I'm far from, you know, being a pro right now. I'm like,
don't even with me. What was your last big finish before today?
I played in the last two pro tours, but that was
I see.
That was kind of accidental, and I top-aided Grand Prix Sydney last year.
Yeah, so. You did.
Oh, God. Man, I accidentally went to these two pro tours.
If I only Whoops. Accidentally made a pro tour.
Man, what a mistake.
Whoops, I tripped and made an end day two this JP. Oh, whoop, now I'm in the top eight. Oh, jeez.
I mean, I only went 2-4 on day two. So, like, it obviously, the skill level can only hit the wall so fast. But it was fun. I think I learned a lot more about drafting this set. I probably drafted it about 10 times before the Grand Prix. And I tried some really low mana strategies. Usually you play like 17 land in a draft deck. I was playing decks that had 14 and 15 land.
Oh my God.
It's just one of the theories I have with the draft format where because there's a lot of implements and stuff like that, you cycle through your land really quickly. So... But it didn't turn out because I actually got mana screwed a lot.
Oh, okay.
Well, you played 14 and 15 lands.
I was unlucky, okay?
Yep.
What other insights do you have about the draft, having done one at 2 a.m. the other night and then, you know, day two?
Yeah, that was probably an ill-advised 2 a.m. draft the day before the Grand Prix. But I did win it, so, you know, like...
It could only be so bad of a decision.
Agree.
I think this format in general, when it was just Kaladesh, you could do a lot of like cool little combos with your energy and with all the puzzle knots, and there was just a lot of like moving parts. Aether Vault kind of like, because of some of the main mechanics, as we talked about, improvise, revolt, the actual keyword, they basically are aggressive keywords. They want you to do like be very proactive, and so the games are generally faster. You generally play your hand a little bit more, and so it's you don't play a deck that really kind of can't interact with the opponent fast or like set up itself fast.
Yeah, Scrounging Bandar. I mean, pick him and pick him early.
Oh yeah, he's great.
Ugh, that card.
Cat Monkey,
that was the number one card that I saw people like going out of their way to just kill on sight.
Cat Monkey. Yeah, man.
Take it down.
What kind of sound does a cat monkey make?
Okay, Megan, which side of it do you want to be, the monkey or the cat?
I'm going to be the cat.
Fine.
Okay.
I knew this would happen. One, two, three.
Is this one?
Yeah, that's monkey? One. Yeah, that's like one animal.
Animal.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's two.
So you have to put them together. Okay. So you just put those two noises together. Yeah. And
that is
there.
A cat monkey.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
That's why I wanted to kill on sight, because that is freaking me out.
Wow. Hurtful, Ben.
No judgment.
That was its mating call. Felt like a judgment. It felt something for you, and you have insulted it.
I meow in a creepy way. Oh, I need to learn to accept that.
It's fine. So you didn't, you didn't come out top eight, but you did have a very good run. In the end, let's fire up and talk about San Jose and Prague, who made the top eight, and just a little bit about their deck list, because the winner of GP San Jose actually didn't drop a single game in the top eight draft, and it was playing something of a Tezzeret's Touch deck. So who do we have here? John Asbach?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't quite sure how to say
John
his last
Asbach's
name.
John Asbach's blue-black Tezzeret's Touch deck.
Nice.
Yeah, it's two Tezzeret's Touch, which is, it's an uncommon. So that the amount of decks that actually can play, you've got to be a little bit fortunate to see them, but they're really powerful, making artifacts 5/5s.
Yeah, so Tezzeret's Touch is one blue-black for an enchantment that says enchant artifact. It is a creature with base power and toughness 5/5 in addition to its other types. When it's put into a graveyard, return that card to its owner's hand.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at this deck. There's some cards in here that you wouldn't typically find very exciting. Like there's a Thriving Rats, there's a Pricata Pillar Bug, which is, just fine. But there's a Pricata Club Security.
Yeah, Pillar Bug, more exciting when it's going to be a 5/5.
But we also have cards over there which could be easily turned into
a Midnight Oil.
Midnight, oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah, there's an Aether Sphere Harvester.
Oh, all right, don't
miss
that.
I mean, yeah, excellent.
Universal Solvent, like we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Implement of Examination. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those could be touched.
Yeah.
I could touch a solvent.
You could touch a solvent.
But you should probably wear rubber gloves because you don't know how acidic
don't want to get melted through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he definitely had a little bit of a plan and was helped out by that harvester, but it's kind of cool to see sort of medium cards in this deck being made. Okay.
Yeah, no, I like how a lot of the multicolor cards, the gold cards that are in sets, they help you build the deck like a little bit more. So obviously with that card, you want to play more artifacts, you want to be a little bit more aggressive. That's a good way of actually drafting. You find a couple of cards that really push you in one direction and then kind of take the train.
So how far up top in a draft would you be willing to take a card like Tezzeret's Touch or another multicolored rare?
Traditionally you're not meant to take a multicolored card too early in a draft because it locks you into two colors. But I think if you see like a multicolored card in a pack, what you should note that it's in that pack, and if it comes round, you're actually likely the only person to be able to play those colors, because if you're already blue black, you would take that card. It's actually good enough. But if you weren't blue black, you just leave it because you can't. It's not really great splashed. It's not really, it's not a card you can just randomly put into a deck. So so look when you first see it and then take it when it comes back.
So he beat Ari Hausman Cohen, who is playing sort of a red white very aggressive deck.
Oh, cool!
It has an Inspired Charge. Let's see. It has an Invigorated Rampage. It has an Iron Tread Crusher.
Yeah, there's that 6/6.
And it even has a Wrangle in here.
I love Wrangle.
Yeah. What? People are saying that card's garbage town.
I think in the really aggressive decks, I think Wrangle is really able to like change the tempo of a game. One thing red has a lot of is a lot of menace creatures. So they need to keep a lot of creatures back to block. And all you do is like steal their key creature, and then they can't block your menace guy. They have to like block their own creature. I think it's actually better than people think, especially because it's so mana efficient. Two mana is really, really cheap.
That's a good point. I was playing a draft today, of which I did poorly. but my opponent was playing, I think, three of the Falter card.
Oh, yeah. Destructive Temper or something like that?
No.
So it either destroys an artifact or creatures without flying can't block this turn.
Yep. Yes.
And he had three of them in his deck.
Wow.
And I saw the first one go out and I was like, okay, Maria, you got to be careful. Like, thank God it's gone. And once it happened, I was like worried about it because I'd seen it the first game. And then I was like, okay, he played it. There were two more. here. And that's like a silly example, but
destructive tampering.
Yep. But a way of how, you know, aggressive decks can get that edge when you think that you've yeah. stabilized and you're fine.
And yeah. I think the fact that it does also, it also has the second mode.
Yeah.
Is makes it so great because a lot of times in this set you want destroy an artifact anyways. Yeah. So you're happy to have it.
Yeah, and it means you can play a lot more of them in your deck because usually if it's just can't block, well, the second one generally isn't very useful. But yeah. if you can kill an artifact and the second time you make them not block, then you've got essentially two different cards.
Yeah.
Megan, you drafted and won a draft.
I did. Yeah.
What did you draft?
I drafted green-white. I was sort of like, you know, I was kind of like dicking around for the first couple of picks. I'll be honest. I first picked a free jam regent.
Yeah, free jam.
Obviously, because it was the rare in the pack. And like, it's a very solid rare. And I was like, sweet. And then I don't remember what I picked after that. And then third pick, I got a winding constrictor. And I was like, you know, I'll speculate. Mm-hmm. I'll speculate on this. I even might have taken it second. And I like, you know.
That snack's good.
Yeah, that comes yeah,
exactly.
really good.
It's a good snack. But then I got past a fourth or fifth pick Thopter Arrest. And I was like, well, okay. And it just kind of fell into place from there.
A good lesson on staying open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I was... Like, that's a nice way to say it. I think I was verging on being wishy-washy. I was treading a very fine line where I could have been wishy-washy and I could have been staying open.
What was the best card that you ended up playing?
I had a Smuggler's Copter, which is like obviously
don't you know
great.
The card's banned?
Yeah.
So.
Why did you break the rules?
I broke the rules. Maria and I, when we made our you can check it on our YouTube video, the worst rares for Aether Revolt sealed.
Yes.
And in the video, we decide that if we want a Riparian Tiger more than we want the rare. But, you know, Riparian Tiger is a great card, and I played it. And it was great.
As usual.
It's a 6/6 freaking Trampler, man. What are you going
to
do?
Ooh, I forgot to tell this in my draft. I opened two Planeswalkers.
What?
Which ones?
Ajani and Chandra.
You took them, right?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Nice.
I played the Chandra.
You probably made more money than I did. and then, like I said, the Iron Tread Crusher, surprisingly, like it was All-star. Just great every time.
I mean, you know, the thing is, it's, this is so weird to me how it can be faster and smaller and yet bigger stuff is better.
Well, the thing is, like, I think one of the things about the Crusher is it comes down to turn four. It's not like it's that slow.
Okay.
It's just bigger. It's dumber. It doesn't have any powers, but also
it doesn't have any powers.
No powers.
Its requirement is only crew three, so it's not actually like demanding that much. And there's a lot of three power creatures. There's a lot in this format.
Yes.
Notably, I had the 3/1 flyer that gives your vehicles flying.
Oh yeah.
But also, I should mention I was playing 2 Druid of the Cowl, which is a card that I'm really up on right now.
Card's great.
If you're playing green, and so there were multiple games where I would play the Crusher on turn 3. And then follow up on turn 4 and crew
and
it.
And then smash for 6.
That just,
that's so
that just
good.
Feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Audacious Infiltrator, the 3/1 that can't be blocked by artifact creatures. That guy's an all-star nowadays.
There's only 2 mana to do that, too.
Oh, wait, I'm going to give a PSA that I forgot to give when I was talking about my sealed deck earlier. Ladies and gentlemen, Cogworker Assembler 237. Create a token that's a copy of target artifact. That token gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step. Just a PSA. This can target any artifact. It doesn't have to be your own.
Oh, yeah, how did you find that out?
I found this out when somebody had their own version of Cogwork Assembler and copied my Noxious Gearhulk, killing it. That was pretty brutal.
Rough.
Pretty rough.
That's rough.
Anyway, I was playing with that card wrong all day. Card's great. Yeah. Card's great.
I'm imagining like some sort of a star going over there. The more you know.
The more you know. But GP San Jose was not the only event going on this weekend.
That's right. Speaking of green-white, Yusuf Kamal Vefa won GP Prague with a green-white deck featuring, let's see, he has all decommissioned one. I've been playing a lot of this card.
Great, great card.
Let's see, Caught in the Brights, Revoke Privileges, some Prey Upons. You know, just like a lot of classic creatures. Some Scrounging Bandars.
2 SRAMs, normally.
2 SRAM. Nice. To restoration specialist to Dawnfeather Eagle.
Restoration
pretty good about Dawnfeather Eagle.
Dawnfeather Eagle is great as well.
Yeah,
I think it might be the best white common actually from either revolt. It's every time I see it cast, it changes the race so much.
Yeah. Giving an overrun, a little mini overrun on a stick, but also vigilance.
Vigilance. It's like that's impressive.
It's really great. I love that card.
Yeah.
And SRAM, SRAM's got to be on the right deck, as I found out at the pre-release. Being too excited to play him, and he was just a stupid 2/2.
Yeah.
But this deck looks like it could be. I mean, we've got Caught in the Brights, Aerial Modification, probably because of that, Revoke Privileges.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a 2/2 for two. It's not, like, too shabby. I mean, it also does a little bit. Also, when you have two, you can throw away the first one, and it's not so bad. You can still draw cards from your auras later.
Yeah,
beat out Paolo Vito Dama de Rosa, friend of the show, who finished second, and now everybody's over there testing for the Pro Tour.
Yeah, let's see what
Paolo was playing.
Let's see, black red.
Ooh, some Rakdos action.
Wow, look at this. Three daring demolition. Yes, please. and a fatal push.
Yeah, it's a great set of removal.
Yeah.
Like, just wow. Lot, really aggressive.
Playing one of those implements that you were talking about, mm-hmm. an Implement of Malice. Only 16 lands. Playing a Siege modification.
But no vehicles?
I don't see any vehicles.
No. Yeah, you just put it on any
old... Just put it on a dude.
Yeah, I mean, +3/+0 and first strike is just...
Not shabby.
Yeah, it's so hard to block. It's so hard to really kind of play around.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually not that many ways to punish you for doing so.
Ooh, it has the rare Quicksmith Rebel.
Oh, that guy's great.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Yeah, and a Servo Schematic.
So, Megan, last week or the week after we did our friend draft, you had 3 Daring Demolitions in a draft deck, and you thought it was, like, too much.
It felt too clunky in that situation, but at the same time, so Paolo's deck looks a lot more aggressive than mine was. The problem is that mine was, like, not aggressive, so I was trying to, like, maybe play some creatures and then maybe kill some things, and, like, maybe play them more creatures.
So, like, it's way better an aggressive deck because what you're doing is you're just shoving out these, like, little dudes on 2.
Creature, pressure them a bunch, and then, like,
kill something. Yeah. So that's why
they think they've stabilized by playing, you know, some big ol' 4/4 or 5/5. Nice try.
Nice try.
You got them.
Nice try. You got them.
Also, we talked about Lifecraft Cavalry. Holy F that card.
The 4/4 that becomes a 6/6.
Yes, boom. With trample.
That card I first picked in a draft today, and I think then I second picked another one. That's how good I think it is. Am I wrong?
I don't think it's wrong.
Is that wrong?
No.
Card's really good.
That card is really good.
Yeah. And you have to kill it.
Generally, people are attacking the turn before, so you kind of, like, if you're trying not to fall behind, you'll trade some, you know, maybe my Pimo Outrider for something that you have. And then this comes as a 6/6.
And then, like, like,
think about a Repairing Tiger that's always energized.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He has so much energy.
He's so ready to go.
So many Red Bulls.
Cavalry, the energetic Repairing Tiger.
It's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Overall, how are you all feeling about this limited format? Where it's early days, but are you liking it better than Kaladesh, worse than Kaladesh? What are you feeling?
You know, Ben, what do you think?
I think I actually like it a little less. I like the kind of the craziness of Kaladesh. Kaladesh has a few more build arounds. My natural tendency is to find, like, what are the 2 cool cards and then build, like, the entire draft around that. There's less of that in Aether Revolt. It's a little bit more aggressive, so there's less time to do some of that stuff. That being said, I think with any format, it kind of has some ebbs and flows, and it changes as time goes on. So it may actually be able to turn into, like, a format that has a lot more kind of meat to it. But right now, it feels a little bit more just generally aggressive, and so the game is all in combat and combat tricks and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree that I like it a little bit less overall.
So would I.
Yeah.
So
it's not a bad. It's not a bad format.
Feel horrible.
No. It's just a little bit different, a little bit faster. Some people like that kind of stuff.
I wanted to give a shout out to Courtney Rudiger, who finished. Let's see, what was her final record? 11-3-1.
11-3-1.
11-3-1 for, I think it was something like 19th place.
What?
Maybe not.
It's got to be. It's
47th. She was finished 47th.
11-3-1 is a really good.
That's
really
amazing.
Good That it's really hard, one, to get to day 2 at the very least. Like, it's not an easy feat. For those who've only played a couple of Grand Prix or no Grand Prix, I think the first time you do it, it feels like great, and it is a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
And to actually be able to like fight your way through the draft or the day two if it's constructed.
I think, yeah, she only had like one loss or something on day two.
There are pros who are playing. There are people who like play all the time. I think if you can ever get to kind of almost, like she's only a win and a draw out of the top eight.
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, you want to follow her on Twitter to keep up with her what she's been doing. She's that BioVisionary, and she won the Play It Forward prize for this GP, which is a really cool program to help help out the women who finish in the top seats of the GP. So that's pretty cool. Congrats, listener Courtney. Great job.
Yeah, nice work.
We didn't day two, but you know it was one of our goals for this year. So we're gonna keep working on it.
Keep freaking working on it.
It's hard to day two a limited GP.
It's hard to day two anything.
Any GP.
It's okay, Maria.
What?
You can talk to the magic therapist about it.
Hey, magic therapist.
Do you have some words for Maria?
Yes. Well, it's you got to think of yourself as the cards.
God, we said therapist.
You're basically turning me into schizophrenic.
You're the card. Be the card.
In retrospect, this might be a terrible idea.
Yeah, look, I...
Can I see your license, please?
We don't need licenses.
Where did you study?
Well, I studied at some academy.
Okay.
That checks out.
That's fine. Someacademy.org.
At least it's a non-profit. It's an .org.
Welcome to this episode of Magic the Semi-Pro, the Ring, the middle of Magic the Amateuring. It's within an episode, much like a pig in a blanket or, a pancake in a microwave that you had last night in your reheating.
Toad in a hole?
Or like the inside of an onion inside the outside of an onion.
Yeah, like that.
Yes.
Like that.
Yeah.
We're interviewing TBS, a.k.a. Ben Sec, a.k.a. Semi-Pro Extraordinaire from Australia. Last top eight GP Sydney last year, and you've been playing for a long time, as we established above. Tell us a little bit of your history, Magic.
Yeah, I started playing with the set Legends, which I think released in something like October or November of 1993. I think it's basically been 24 years since I've been playing Magic, and I've actually played pretty much consistently. I mean, I've played more and less over the time, but I don't think there's ever been a year that I didn't play like a Grand Prix of some sort or something like that. So
it's only 20 more years than us. No big deal.
Yeah. Despite resolving to retire when you were like in your upper teens.
I've definitely had those moments where and kind of events that kind of made me want to think about retiring. I had my collection stolen a couple of times. That wasn't so good.
Jeez.
A few years ago, my house burned down with all my collections. So I've actually lost my collection multiple times.
Do you ever think that there's some kind of vengeful god that's trying to send you a message?
Yeah.
You think that, then, you know, but life's generally pretty good. So, I mean, anyway...
But then Magic Online is on.
That's right.
They can burn. Collection there exists forever.
They can burn that.
They could burn that down, I guess.
I guess.
I started it, like, you know, it was in high school when I first started. I played it while I was in a play at school, and we played it in between like rehearsals. And very soon I kind of got into the local tournament scene, which... Back then, I mean, you've probably heard about the Wild West of like competitive Magic back in the day.
Oh, it's some of my favorite stories.
Yeah,
but this is the Wilder West, because it's not like because
you guys had kangaroos.
Yeah, we had kangaroos in addition to like Legends boosters.
Yeah, I heard that every once in a while, you never knew if you showed up at, you know, like an Australian event, you might be playing a person, might be boxing a kangaroo.
It's true. I cannot deny that.
Would you put your hand in a kangaroo's pouch?
No, that's all slimy and everything.
If there was a box of Aether Revolt in there.
Well,
no.
What? You wouldn't even put your hand in there for one second, one slimy second, to grab that box and grab it up?
No, I would.
It's still in the plastic.
Let's just start with, I feel like that kangaroo is being used.
Yeah. The kangaroo really might have saved up all her money.
I'm not saying you're stealing from this kangaroo.
Well, then
I'm
how did you get it?
This kangaroo puts it in its pouch, and then it's like, hey, want a free box?
Then that kangaroo was a fucking creeper.
I'm just saying, oh, now that I'm like imagining it, I'm like, would I really put my hand in
would
there?
Would you really?
In a box?
Would you?
How could I turn down the chance to feel inside the pouch?
It really is just a once in a lifetime opportunity to draft out of a pouch.
I agree. we've gone off the rails.
Yeah, we've got a little off the rails. No, I mean, so I had most of my early magic experiences playing in Australia, but we had PTQs, so we had opportunity to go overseas. And so my first Pro Tour was in 1997. It was Pro Tour New York. It was the sets. It was booster draft. That was the time when they only had one format rather than the two formats they have now.
So it was draft for every... All day.
The all day. You start with draft. You end with draft. It's two days of draft.
Oh my god!
And the sets were 5th edition and Visions. Now Visions is the second set in like after Mirage. I don't know if you remember the African theme set, and it's called Visions. And a lot of the kind of it was one of the first sets that they specifically balanced for draft. And so it was actually really fun. And but I went an inauspicious 0-7 at my first Pro Tour. But I didn't drop.
That's great.
Because it was my first Pro Tour, I wanted to have the entire experience, and I got destroyed. Just like,
well, I mean, were you able to test a lot before this?
No, there was not really. The concept of testing was very, very loose back then.
Yeah.
I mean, one, the testing teams basically don't like exist. You just test with your friends. You say, oh, I have this deck. Let's just play, and they might even play a different format. Who knows? But it's just really, really hard to get people together because Magic was a little bit smaller. Magic Online doesn't exist. The internet is barely having kind of like Magic content this time. I know it sounds like I'm talking about dinosaurs also like flying through, like, you know.
Yeah. And there was a Tyrannosaurus Rex in the event hall.
Right.
Yes. Everyone thankfully wore their loincloth to the convention center for the PT.
But it's actually one of my favorite PT experiences. It, like going 0-7, it was a time when there was a lot of side events. So right now, I think they generally don't have side events at a PT so they can focus on it. But they used to make it like Grand Prix are now. There's lots of side events. You can meet other people. One of the tournaments I did win actually on that weekend was a Chinese 4th edition Grandmaster. Have you heard of Grandmaster?
No. Like as far as chess is concerned.
Well, so you know what Mini Master is, right?
Yeah.
So you get a booster and then you add some land and you play again. If you beat your opponent, you get their pack.
Yeah. Right?
And you add it. So Grandmaster is, think of it, Magic used to be sold in starters, which is like a box of 60 cards. So instead of a booster, you get the box. And so if you beat your opponent, you get all 60 of their cards.
Oh my, sick.
And it was 128 players, single elimination. So it's like a bracket.
Oh my god.
And the winner gets 128 starters worth of Chinese 4th edition. It was fantastic. It was like one of my favorite like tournaments that I won. My deck in the end. And you can, every time you get new cards, you can pare it down to 40. And so I had like 10 lightning bolts. Like 10 fireballs. It was crazy. It was just so fun.
Nice. Just burn them out.
So you were pretty young.
I was really young. I was for my first Pro Tour. I was 17.
So how did your family feel about you going to this Pro Tour?
So I mean, it's not my.
We won't tell your mom. We won't this episode.
Hi, mom. Yeah. No, my mom. Like she remembers this. She's part of the story. So I qualified for my first Pro Tour. My parents didn't really kind of agree with me playing a lot of Magic. When I started playing, I kind of got a little bit kind of obsessed. I really was just spending all my time, like instead of studying, I was like writing deck lists and things like that. So I asked my parents when I qualified, could I go to New York? Now, at this point, I'd never gone overseas by myself. And so, you know, as you'd expect, your parents will say, no, you can't do this. But one thing I did happen to do a lot was I was part of an orchestra. I played the violin.
Yeah.
We went on tours. So I was like, okay. So a few months later, because there was 6 months between when I qualified and when the Pro Tour was, I knew my mother had forgotten that I asked about the tournament. So I told a small little white lie.
This is like the greatest lie.
Yeah, so I said, hey, mom, we have an orchestra tour. It happens to be on this weekend, which happens to be the Pro Tour weekend. But, I said it was local. It was like somewhere within the state that I lived in. And instead, I saved up all this money. I went to New York for. I used to live in Sydney, Australia.
Just kidding. I'm on a 15-hour plane flight.
Yeah, no, it's a total 20 hours from Sydney. It's crazy. Oh my God. Okay, so the thing is, it's don't do this, kids at home. It's not good to go on
for any kids listening. We do not condone lying to your parents to go play in a magic tournament.
I was a bad kid, so let's let them. But I did have the presence of mind to tell my brother, my older brother, he was 4 years older, he was like in college, and I said, okay, I'm going to do this thing. Don't tell mom. Here's the itinerary just in case something goes crazy wrong. And nothing went crazy wrong. I went to the Pro Tour. I hung around New York for a little bit and went back home. But
it's like you booked a hotel and stuff.
Oh, I mean, it wasn't as flashy as that. It was like a youth hostel and things like that. I really slumped.
Still,
it.
I mean, that's pretty good for like a kid.
Yeah, you know, I was a little bit of an adventurous kid, knew no boundaries. No, but so I come so to really kind of make sure that the illusion was created. I even brought my violin to the Pro Tour. Because I couldn't leave the violin at home.
No, it would be obvious that you weren't playing your violin.
That's right. So I took it there. And anyway.
You thought of everything, dude.
Oh, no. I every angle was covered. So I go on the Pro Tour. I was away for about a week and a half. And I come back home. And I'm walking back up my street to my house. Carrying my bag, some of the cards, my violin. And my mother's standing at the door. Now, she doesn't usually, she's not waiting for me at the door. It's not a behavior that she usually does. She'll just, be in the kitchen or she'll be cleaning up somewhere. But she happened to be at the door. And she met me at the door and she said, oh, well, you know, welcome home. And she asked me about the orchestra tour that I was going to be on. And then, of course, I was thinking, the ruse was complete. Like, she believed that it was, there's no way that she was going to, she obviously had swallowed the lie. Okay, this is not, it's a lie. Yeah,
there's nothing no else, quotes. Nothing else to call it.
So she asked me about all the cities I went to, or all the concerts, and I just kept on lying.
Wow.
My mother isn't deceptive anyway. So I was just thinking that she was interested, but she kept on asking more detailed questions about the trip. She's never this interested, and this conversation probably went for 10, 15 minutes. And
she was determined.
At some point, I realized I said it's very likely the jig was up, but I didn't know if I should just crumple over and say, oh, I'm sorry right now, or I should just keep going because there's a chance that maybe she didn't know. Anyway, obviously, as you might imagine, she actually knew. She actually found it from my brother. My brother actually had kind of ratted me out. I think, in hindsight, he did a very, very kind of smart, older brotherly thing to do.
Probably the right thing to do.
He let me go. So because that's what brothers do. But he definitely didn't let me go for free. He basically made me pay for it. And so
that's great.
At the time I was kind of I was angry, but I actually think, that with time I realized that he probably did the best option of all of it. So I got to go to the Pro Tour. I copped a little bit of a hiding from my parents, and that's.
Were you grounded forever?
I was grounded. The thing is, we didn't really get grounded, but I definitely was in the bad books for a while. For a while.
Oh, that's such a great story. Oh,
so good.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, magic over the years, I've had kind of intense years. I mean, those early years, I played a lot of competitive magic. I did pretty well. I traveled all over the world. I was able to go to, I was able to win a Grand Prix in Cape Town.
Yeah, the only Grand Prix in South Africa ever.
Yep. Yeah, no, so if they have another one, I have to go back and defend. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
But also in addition to that, I actually I top aided a Pro Tour in Japan, and so I had a kind of middling like career. But I've always loved Magic, and I've always loved games. I made my first game when I was in like grade school. I actually have it in a little box at back home in Australia. And I knew I loved games, and I knew I loved how to make them and all the things around it. And so I've been able to turn that love of Magic and games into a career. So I'm now a creative director for Disney. I make, you know, like computer games, mobile games. And I will completely attest that it has 100% to do with starting to play Magic, understanding it, meeting the people, like networking, making friends.
It's telling your mother a gigantic lie.
Yes, you'll be a big guy at Disney if you lie to your mother. You heard her first.
Sorry, so yeah. You hear that?
I apologize, Mom.
So,
but it worked out.
I mean, as somebody from a gaming perspective, how do you see the game of Magic? Obviously, when I talk about it, I say it's the greatest game that I've ever played. Do you feel the same way?
It is absolutely the greatest game. I mean, there are so few games like that one last as long and have such a wide appeal as Magic. Magic, it was saying, it's like coming on 25 years of existence. And the amount of people playing has not decreased, it's actually increased over that period of time. So this is it's a better game than it was when it started. And I think that concept is actually pretty lost. I mean, tell me how many games like get better as time goes on. And it's just, you probably can't think of any, because games like chess, they don't never change. Games like
checkers
Monopoly.
Get solved.
Yeah, checkers get solved. Even
you Monopoly know, makes you lose all your friends.
Yep.
That's right.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Sorry is not technically a game.
Yeah. Trouble is just a word.
Why are they called Sorry and Trouble? Why are they so down?
Sorry is like the most Minnesotan game possible. I just realized.
Oh, I'm also on your
sorry,
spot.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know.
But we do ask people this. What would you change about Magic if you could change something?
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm trying to figure out, like, I think there's some obvious answers about, like, I wish there was, like, a better online version and things like that. But I don't think those are very satisfying when it comes to it. I think I wish that there was a way of having a skilled version of Magic that, you know, like, one of the problems I think with Magic is there's this big rift between casual players and tournament players. And they love different games for all intents and purposes. Like, seeing all the combinations of the cards, like not knowing all what to do on a game board, like making theme decks, like playing the biggest creature. These are all kind of like goals for casual players, and then you have tournament players who basically want the best player to win. And I think R&D has made it such an admirable kind of like balanced game that is able to at least somewhat be able to cater to both sides of it. But I wish there was just a little bit more kind of inclusiveness amongst kind of casuals and competitive players. I feel that there is some, and I think your show is a really good example of how you can bridge that gap. But I think there needs to be more kind of like outreach between the groups, because I think, one, they both want Magic to succeed, and I think they both like will do better if they're able to kind of like understand each other a little better.
Would it help if we brought some kitchen tables into the GP hall?
Sure. I mean, yeah, mine's a little heavy, but I think we could probably find a way.
Put a toaster on that, make some toast and play your Magic cards.
Just put like a couple of placemats instead of playmats.
Perfect. Well, I mean, like they run events like Commander, for example, at GPs, which I think is a good way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think there's so many. I mean, if you
would you do?
What would I do? I think I think the events that Magic do for the most part are like Grand Prix and things like that, and they're very competitive events. Whenever Magic appears at like a convention like PAX, I think the events that they have are much more fun. They're a little bit more interesting. They're not just about like winning, they're about experiencing kind of new product, new combinations of things, interesting formats. They do chaos drafts, they do like also like they have escape rooms that are magic themed and things like that. Mm-hmm. I wonder if magic might be better served by kind of a much more kind of inclusive convention that's just about magic. I find that actually pretty surprising that there isn't a magic convention. It's always part of another convention or it's a Grand Prix. And I think a Grand Prix is one thing. One, its focus is around the Grand Prix itself, mm-hmm. the competition. I wish there was kind of an event that celebrated magic, celebrated the art, celebrated the cosplay, celebrated every aspect of the community in different ways that everybody would come together and kind of mingle and, you know, just share an appreciation.
Speaking of conventions, we always like to note what convention we are sharing the convention hall with at Grand Prix.
Yes.
And this weekend we had an epic one.
It was great. It was like middle school tops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cheer competition.
Yeah.
Middle school cheer.
The funny thing is, this is not the first time that a Grand Prix has been like at a cheerleading competition. It's probably like the sixth or seventh like.
Oh, it's such convention a center at the same time.
And it's such a weird. It's a
they
weird
looked crossover. Intense.
Oh yeah, they were there to win. Yeah. Or
holy, all of them, all of them
drop their friends.
Yeah. I'm sure if they played in the Grand Prix, they would win because they were that intense.
They would bring the they intensity needed to win a Grand Prix.
That movie's called Bring It On for a reason.
Yes.
If it was Bring It Off, what it would be. Not what would that mean?
No.
Megan's mind has run away with her. So, I mean, do you have any goals playing Magic? You've been 24 mm-hmm. years. You've top-aided a pro tour. You've won a GP.
So I'm finding a balance between now I work full-time. I still love Magic. I play it like a couple times a week, but I generally don't play events unless I play Grand Prix. So Grand Prix San Jose was a good kind of event to go to because it's just about an hour away. I want to be able to see if I can still have success at the pro level. I was saying that I've played the last two pro tours, but I didn't do very well. And I even had good playtest teams. I felt well prepared, but I was definitely outclassed by the new players. There are players out there, you know, LSV, like they have full-time jobs and able to kind of still excel. Now, he's possibly a freak. He's like one of the best players of all time. But at one point I used to be good enough to mix it, and I feel like I'm off my game. I don't know if it's possible to do it with a full-time job. It's possible to do it with wanting. Magic is one of many hobbies that I have. But I love the competition and I love the game, and so it would be nice to be able to come back to it and still be able to, you know, get a little bit further than what I've been going. I mean, I love making day two. It was super fun, but I want to make another top eight. I want to see if I can win another Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Speaking of hobbies, we're going to take a break for a second to get you set up. You're going to showcase one of your hobbies for us on the show.
So excited.
It's the first time Magic the Amateuring has ever had a concert.
Yes.
So another fun fact about you, you made it nearly to the final round of auditions in Australian Idol.
Yes. So I have a policy of, I will try anything once.
Because, even sticking my hand in a kangaroo's warm pouch.
Well, I mean, there are lines that I will not cross. But I've always had a little bit of an artistic or musical upbringing. So I was in plays, musicals, and stuff like that. And so apparently in Australia, and I'm not sure if that's true in America, but at least when it was on, Australian Idol had an age limit of 28. And so for my, I think, second to last year of eligibility, I thought, like, this is the only time that I'm ever going to be able to do it. So I, like, went to the venue that they were having Australian Idol tryouts. And me and about 25,000 of my closest friends were lining up. in the cold, it was during the winter in Melbourne, Australia.
And so it was like 60 degrees?
Oh, no. It was actually pretty cold. I mean, not the Minnesota cold.
Was it freezing?
It was freezing. No, it was probably... So it was about 5 degrees Celsius. So
I can do the math on that.
I know what that means.
Yep.
Using your iPhone doesn't mean you're doing the math.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm doing research.
Do you have the Australian equivalent of Simon Cowell?
We do have that. Like they're pretty careful to have the same structure. So yeah. there's one person who's like in the industry.
41.
41.
Whoa. Wow. That's heat wave. So temperate.
Heat wave.
41? 41's so cold.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we're in the cold, and so we're... But the environment was so festive. People had like beatboxes, boomboxes. There's like a lot of singing. But we had to get there at 2 a.m. For the doors to open at 10 a.m. Because if they only took the first 20,000 people, so people lining up for so long, it was so cold. But everyone was singing, so it was kind of fun. But everyone was tired too, so it wasn't that fun. Anyway.
Net, it was as much fun as just sitting, like sitting in a chair.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
It balanced itself out. But so when you go in for the audition, they have a few rounds. Firstly, you have there's a associate producer who listens to you, and they basically evaluate you for whether you're good or whether you're atrocious. Because there's two things that they want to make sure. If they want to get the people who are excellent, and they want to get the train wrecks.
Yeah.
Right. But the people in the middle, they actually don't care about. So I passed that. So I don't know at this point if I was a train wreck or good.
Oh, you still don't know.
But you can tell. Like, at least for me, I think I wasn't a train wreck. Then you have an interview. So they want to find that you have a great story for some reason. So they're able to build some sort of reality show kind of story around you. And then you sing with one of the actual producers of the show. And if you get past that, then you get to go on the TV judges. I got to the third part where you sing for about 30 seconds, and then I got cut at that point.
Oh, brutal.
But, you know, it was a great experience. I would do it again. It was just a cool way to spend a day and, you know, just to sing.
I feel like I want to ask you to give us a few bars of your song, but I don't know if that's rude because you're not warmed up.
I can do it, probably.
Okay. I just feel like it's Chekhov's gun at this point. We've talked about it enough.
It's Fly me to the moon and let me dance among the stars. Tell me what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, darling, just kiss me.
Yay! That wasn't even the concert we were going to have.
No. But now we're going to make you prove your multifaceted talent.
Yes. So let's get ready to hear you play the violin.
Okay.
Yes. And now presenting on National Public Radio, Mr. Bensek playing the Nerd Medley. absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
Thank you so much for sharing your talents and your knowledge with us, Ben.
That was fun. I really enjoyed it.
If people want to follow you on Twitter and get the what about your life and follow you in tournaments and what should they do?
Yep. My Twitter handle is at TBS-TBSDASH. And I sometimes do Magic TV at Channel Fiber sometimes. So I kind of have a little bit of social media presence. I don't tweet that much, but usually when tournaments are around, I try and say something.
Yeah.
All right.
That was so good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, you know, we could make a concert. What do you want to play, Megan?
Man, I'll, you know, play that nose flute that you got yesterday.
So at the GP, somebody asked me to sign their nose flute and then gave me one.
Oh. Yeah.
This is a moment that probably doesn't happen to most people.
No, it really doesn't. It really doesn't.
Now I don't even know what a nose flute is.
Me neither, honestly.
It's a flute you put in your nose.
I'm just repeating something I heard Maria say as a pair of words. So.
It's in my bag right over there.
Yeah.
And I will play the ukulele, but I will only play All Star by Smash Mouth.
Perfect. Okay.
That's all I want to play.
This is going to be a quality concert.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
Are we going to have judges like American Idol?
I mean, if that's what you know.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want to tear you away from your reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too much. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, it was fun. I had a blast.
And thank you again to all of our Patreon subscribers. Mm-hmm. You guys are really our bread and butter and what keep the show on its feet.
Yeah. Bread and butter isn't good enough because, you know, you're better than that.
You're better than bread and butter is what you're saying.
You like really good ice cream.
Or like cinnamon raisin toast with butter.
No, mostly ice cream. Man, okay. I'm thinking about ice cream.
Or a milkshake.
Yeah.
What about that?
Oh, why'd you have to say that? Why'd you have to say the M word, man?
The Less Than 1% Club is a proud exclusive club.
Yes.
And you are all our personal milkshakes. I don't know if that makes you feel good.
Thank you again so much to CardKingdom.com, CardKingdom/MTAcast. The best place to get all of your magic needs, singles, boosters, binders, etc., and more.
That's right. And of course, check out our YouTube channel, magicthematuring.com/. YouTube.com/MTAcast.
Yeah.
But you can also go our website.
What a website. Magnets.
Shirts.
Playmats.
Playmats. We got it all. Ladies' sizes, men's sizes. We don't have sizes for babies.
Or dogs.
Or small chickens.
I wouldn't I don't have a dog, but I'd really like a dog.
Dog-sized shirt.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll work on that.
No problem.
Next week, Megan is going to be in Dublin for
the Pro Tour.
She'll be writing for coverage.
You can read words that I type with my own two hands.
Make sure you check out dailymtg.com because that's where your work will be on.
Yes.
And like I said, watch out for that Elves Deck Tech because it's going to be coming out. Follow us on Twitter at MTAcast to make sure you hear that when that comes out.
You get to hear some strange metaphors.
It's going to be so good.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us this week. We'll probably be doing a podcast across the ocean next week, so it's going to be exciting.
It will be.
And if you get a chance, tune into twitch.tv/magic. Check out coverage of the Pro Tour this weekend. Make sure you've got your glass of Irish whiskey.
And a plate of pizza rolls. We'd be remiss if we told you otherwise.
Yes. A traditional Irish feast.
Thank you.